Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We return for the second hour featuring our guest, Clifford Mahudi. We're talking about Indian culture and legends, and we only touched briefly on those. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Chris, why don't you take Clifford further into this description, also about his background and training?
Well, yeah, one of the things that Clifford mentioned was that the Hopi and Zuni share a creation myth. Now, why don't we just quickly go into, for people in the listening audience out there who are not familiar with the idea of the place of emergence, the Sipapuna, I believe you is the Zuni pronunciation. Why don't you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of how the legend of the emergence of the people is set up, and how it might differ between the Hopi and Zuni versions versus the Rio Grande Pueblo versions?
Well, first of all, the Sipapu is the term that is very prevalent on all Pueblo tribes. It doesn't make any difference whether you go to Hopi, or go to Zuni, or up in the north. The Sipapu is the term that is used for the emergence from the underworld. In the last world upheaval, or when the destroyer of the last world, they had to go underground. We, as Pueblo people, we were saved by the underground people. I think the Hopis have very thoroughly discussed this about their talking about being saved by the ant people. All Indian tribes, the southwestern Pueblo tribes, have legends of different types of people that are underneath the earth, that are have been there since the beginning of time or beginning of the earth, and they have come to their rescue in many different times the closing of the worlds before us. But the parallels that are between the Hopi and Zuni is that we all both came from the Grand Canyon. There's a place called Sipapu, I believe, in the Grand Canyon. I've never been there, but we know about it through our songs and our rituals and our designation when we go through prayer systems. And we also refer to the fourth world. The fourth world, we came up from the fourth world, and you can read any book on about some of the writers that talk about this. There's a lot of variations depending on the storyteller, but a lot of these legends have been recorded, and we talk about emergence from the fourth world. So there's a lot of things that occurred in the past that are, again, it's verbal knowledge, and it's passed on by oral tradition and oral rituals that we know about.
So we're in the fourth world now, correct? This is the fourth world that we're in now. It's difficult, I think, for some people to grasp the idea of being led underground and protected while the earth goes through changes and cleanses itself, and then being allowed to reemerge into this world to repopulate the world. The Zuni have some very interesting, have a very interesting tradition that does vary somewhat from the other versions about how the people looked when they first emerged and what actually happened to allow humans to become the way they are today. You want to give us a quick thumbnail on that?
Well, you can look at it from when these legends were first taught me many, many years ago by the elders. It was sort of like a very, very funny side of it. They say that they were not anatomically, they were not right with their anatomy at the right places. So, in other words, they had their, for example, the Zuni legend is that they had their parts of their anatomy on their faces. They had six fingers, they had six toes, and they were not the way that they are today. But because of the star people that they sent down here, they had to correct those people that had been inside the earth for I don't know how long. But they start being in the dark and being in that realm for ages and eons, maybe, they start having different anatomy come about. But when they emerge into the fourth world, they have to correct them. And that's where the twin gods of the sun, the father, son, send the twin gods to correct the anatomy of the humans that were coming up from the fourth world.
So would this be like a genetic correction, some sort of, would that be the modern equivalent?
I think again, because of the parallels of my teachings, I think that when I look at it from the standpoint of, you look at it from the ritualistic standpoint, the legendary standpoint, I think this is a way that they corrected them using very high technology to remove a lot of those things and put the anatomy in the right places. Especially like the genitals had to be put where it is today in the human being, and then had to cut off the six fingers. And there's still a lot of places, like for example, here about 20, 30 miles west of here, where they still have petroglyphs of those type of people that were like that from the origin.
And which is where you took me. My first trip up to Zuni was to that particular canyon. That had all these thousands of glyphs.
Mm-hmm. If that canyon that I took you to, that was where they originated the clan system for the Zuni. And there's that big rock that they have to go through on a ritualistic to correct a lot of the anatomy on that. So that my teachings by the elders is that the twin gods, which is very prevalent in all of the pueblos too, each pueblo has the twin gods. And they're the same names, whether it's in Hopi, whether it's in Zuni, or up in the Kiri's country. They got the same names, and they're the twin gods. They came to the planet Earth to correct and to lead the people out, and they were actually servants. They were also gods, but they were like lesser gods, if you may, that had specific duties to do. Each god or each space being, star person or star being, had very specific duties and responsibilities for the creation, during the creation, so that's why, but those twin gods are the ones that are very prevalent in the correction of the human anatomy, and also for the migration, to start the migrations.
It sounds like a really interesting parallel to Enki and Enlil from Zachariah Sitchin's interpretations of Sumerian, ancient Sumerian lore. And it also reminds me of the warrior twins of the Hopi stories. Now, you learned all this information after you were brought into the Galaxy or Clown Medicine Society, is that correct?
Well, I knew most about this, but I did not know at that time. It was just teachings. Well, those twin gods or warrior gods, it's the same as Hopi, like I said. But this information that I'm telling you right now is that I started studying this after I left college, after I learned, and then I used to go to the rare book rooms in the university and to start teaching myself about what the recorded history was, because this information was developed by people that used to be here, by anthropologists and archaeologists and linguists and so on. So there's a lot of books that I read that has this background information, but I did not really learn about this until I got into the society and also get involved with the different order systems, and then to participate full time in the rituals that we go through here in Zuni. And of course, by that time, a lot of our elders had passed on, the real true historians. My grandfather was a historian of the tribe. So a lot of this information I got when I was a young man, well, maybe a kid about 10 to 15 years old, I did not start up until after I was 30 years old.
I'll tell you what, then, Clifford, let's continue this in our next section. We have Clifford Mahudi joining us this week. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Gold. If you listen to the radio, watch TV, or surf the net, you're hearing about gold. Eventually you will ask yourself, is gold right for me? The answer might surprise you. We protect ourselves and our families from many things. Do you have medical insurance? Is your home insured? Do you carry life insurance? How about financial insurance? If you own gold, then the answer is yes. If you don't own gold, the question is, why don't you have financial insurance? We put our faith in things we trust. Do you trust the dollar? Do you trust the economy? Do you trust the government? Gold has always been something you can trust. For thousands of years, people have put their faith in gold. Where will you put your faith? Now is the time to protect yourself and your family. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. And ask for Jim Parker. Let me help you get started today. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today. That sound could save your life. In our fast-changing world, you and your loved one may have limited time to escape dangerous nuclear radiation after a power plant accident, terror attack, or dirty bomb explosion. When that happens, you'll be glad you have Nuke Alert. More than just a radiation detector, Nuke Alert is a patented radiation monitor and alarm used nationwide by federal, state, and local first responders and the Department of Defense. Nuke Alert, attached to your keychain, is always with you and on 24/7 to promptly warn you of unseen but dangerously rising radiation levels. Nuke Alert incorporates a 10-year battery backed up by a 10-year warranty. See Nuke Alert in action at KI4U.com. That's K-I, the number 4, the letter U.com. When ordering anything at KI4U.com, type in GCN in the comment box at checkout and you'll get free two of their new just released peel and stick rad sticker decimeters as a free bonus. Go to KI4U.com today and be ready for anything nuclear unleashed tomorrow.
On air, online,
and on demand.
They say we offer simple answers to complex problems.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
We have Clifford Mahudi, a Zuni elder. We're talking about the tribal culture, about the legends of the star people. I have a question to ask him about that in a moment. Chris O'Brien is the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. When I listen to these legends, it seems to me that almost all of the world's religions have some kind of legend or historical experience about interactions with higher beings, star people, etc., etc. Now, yes, we're focusing very much on your culture, but don't you think that maybe all of these religions, all our remembrances of ancient man are all pointing to the same sources?
I believe so. Once I started learning about other parallels with those type of legends or the history or mythology, it seems to me that all the different people throughout the world have got the same history, except that they had, the only thing is that they have different names. They have different applications. But I think that what the Zunis say is that these are people that are here, were here during the creation, so they have, they're all over the world, as on the planet as we know it, and they go like instantaneously to one side of the earth to the other side, and in Zuni we call them the raw people, raw in the sense that you cannot see them. They can become visible, but I'm sure that there's a lot of parallels to other peoples throughout the country or about the world that are of the same stature.
Clifford, one thing I'm curious about here, you're trained as an engineer. You're dealing with hard numbers, hard figures. Now, reconciling this with oral traditions, how does one reconcile with themselves evidence of the presence of these beings? And as we say, do you relate that star people legend to the UFOs that we see today?
Well, first of all, the Zuni people have always had history of UFOs. There have been throughout the history of the Zuni people say that they used to be like orbs, or they would come during times of good times. Say if you're going to have a good harvest or a good weather, they'll be here, but at the same time, they would also appear there are going to be hard times, depending on the interpretation and the occasion that they appear. They've always been here. We've always been told. One of the things that we do not, as Indian children, don't do is that we don't look up into the sky. That's the first thing that we are taught as young people, do not look up into the sky because they will come back and look at you. So they've always been around.
Okay, but that's interesting here. Why would you not look in the sky? You don't want them to come to you?
I think in the beginning when they're up there, you can see them. You can see them because if you look up into the sky, you're asking for them to make contact with you, I believe. Because a lot of these things that they tell you not to do, when you ask a question like that, they say, why can I look up into the sky? They'll tell you, because you're not supposed to. And they don't have any explanation because they don't want, I think it's a mystery that they want to keep that like the way it is, or because the early teachings told them, you will never look up into the sky. So that's what really was intriguing to me, because when I started looking for things like that, then things start happening. I've seen UFOs since I was about when I turned 18 years old. And I've seen UFOs, I've seen a lot of things, because I always look up into the sky. When people in Zuni, when they used to do that, they told them not to do that. So they just, you never ask any questions.
Okay, so obviously you were the questioning sort. You saw these things. Can you give us more detail about some of these sightings? The first one, you were 18, you said?
Yes, we were coming in from Gallup, and we came in about 3 o'clock in the morning, coming in from Gallup, New Mexico, into the reservation, about 30 miles. And we saw a big, bright, like a sun coming up in the morning, but it was 3 o'clock in the morning, so it wasn't the sun. We came into this valley, and we saw it all lit up, but we came into the reservation line, and in front of us was sitting this big, big UFO. And we started fast with our car, and it started following us back into the village. In those days, they used to have FAA stations throughout the country for airplane routes and vortex or whatever. So We went to the airplane, the FAA station to alert those people, but they didn't get out. And so I came home to Zumi, and I sat out there and watched that, and I didn't realize that there was two of them at that time. This was in 1964. So this was, I looked up there, and there was two of them, and I waited until the sun came up, and they were still sitting up there. So I know about them since that was a real big one. But prior to that, I had seen them, but I had never really thought about it until about that time, because I've seen them since I was a kid.
So when the sun came up, what did you see? A structure, two structured craft, or what did they look like?
They were just like silver orbs, like way up. They were bright during the nighttime, but when the sun came up, they were sitting there like two silver, dull silver orbs sitting up on top of the, it's way up there in the sky. They weren't as big as what they were about 3 o'clock in the morning, but they sat out there, and the stars disappeared, and they were still sitting there. So that was the only, I knew then that they were not stars.
You mentioned that right back around the time period, I think it was within days of the very famous Travis Walton abduction case, which occurred just down the road from Zuni, less than 100 miles away, that you had a very interesting sighting as well with, I think, your family. You want to describe that for us?
Yes, this was in 1976. And I think Travis Walton's abduction was probably about the last part of November. And the one that we saw was the first weekend in December of 1976. We were coming in from Arizona about 2 o'clock in the morning. And we were driving a brand-new car. It only had about 1,000, 1,500 miles on it. So there was nothing wrong with the car. It's brand-new. And on the right side, coming off the horizon, I saw this orb or orange light. And I didn't want to tell my brother he was driving, and his girlfriend. So we were driving back into the village, going on the east, going from west to east. About 2 miles from the village, this thing just started coming. This got bigger and bigger, and about a half a mile, maybe even a quarter of a mile off the road, there's a big sewer pond that the tribe got the sewer ponds out there. And it settled on there, and about that time, our car started dimming its lights.
Okay, we'll talk about the electromagnetic effect to your car in a moment. We have Clifford Mahudi joining us this week. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space, and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
It's the end of summer blowout sale at HerbalHealer.com.
Now take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on colloidal silver.
500 parts per million, pharmaceutical grade.
All sizes from 2 ounces to a gallon on sale.
It's simply the best colloidal silver available.
And CoQ10 100 milligrams with hawthorn.
An exceptional supplement for heart and arterial health.
Is only $19.
Plus, get the number one arthritis supplement, glucosamine chondroitin.
60 caps for only $12.
Where?
HerbalHealer.com.
Super Femplex and Super Maleplex, both great formulas for reproductive tonification,
are on sale now, 90 tabs, only $15.
Need a safe and mild colon detoxifier?
Herbal Healer Academy's Colon Enhancer Large 250 capsule bottle is now only $18. There's so much more at herbalhealer.com.
But not much time.
The end of summer blowout sale ends October 13th.
New customers get a free catalog with your first order.
Log on and hit the summer specials now at herbalhealer.com.
There are all sorts of things on the market designed to keep you safe when you're out and about. Whistles, mace, you name it. But for real peace of mind for parents, students, and children, you need an iSafe bag.
We heard a loud noise, and I could see a flashing in the backpack.
The sound was different than a car alarm, so it was a different sound, so we looked to see what it was.
I think it's a great idea.
Introducing the iSafe bag, a backpack that looks normal until you pull the pin. The iSafe bag emits two powerful sirens and a high-intensity strobe light simultaneously to attract immediate help.
Having the iSafe bag gives me a feeling of being safe because I know when I pull the alarm, people will hear it and they'll come and help me.
For mobile personal security, get the iSafe bag at iSafeBags.com. That's the letter iSafeBags.com. iSafeBags.com.
I thank God that she had that backpack and she had enough sense to use it.
It's like having a bodyguard with you all the time. The iSafe bag, the patented bag with a built-in alarm, available at iSafeBags.com.
You've got your gold, water filters, and storable food. Now for complete self-sufficiency, make your own fuel with Revenor.com. Don't laugh. A quality still from Revenor.com and our free book included with every still is all you need to beat the high cost of gas and stop dependence on foreign oil. Find out how easy it is to legally make your own alcohol fuel at R-E-V-E-N-O-O-R.com. Or call 503-662-4173. Revenor.com. Find quality alcohol stills.
Did somebody say stills? That's how Grandpappy made his own sour mash, and you can too. Revenor stills can be used to make brandies, liquors, whiskey, vodka, and more. All perfectly legal with a permit. You should check into having your own Revenor still at Revenor.com. That's R-E-V-E-N-O-O-R.com. Or call 503-662-4173. 1 year warranty on all stills from Revenor.com. Fine quality alcohol stills.
How do you spell hard-hitting talk radio?
G-C-N.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
Clifford Mahoney joining us, and we're all laughing at the way that Chris O'Brien says, the Paracast. At least he doesn't do it like a trickster anymore. Oh, God, we're in trouble now, ladies and gentlemen. I will not even begin to try to explain what that's all about. I'm Gene Steinberger in the Paracast. We're talking to Clifford Mahoney, and we are immersed in his UFO sighting. On your car, the lights are dimming. Let's pick up from there.
Okay, so we were looking at each other, and I said, and then I told my brother, I said, look, it's what the heck is that over there? And about that time, it must have been, I would say, at that distance, it must have been about 50 feet in diameter, from about a quarter of a mile off the road, quarter to a half a mile off the road, about 50 feet in diameter, sitting up on above the sewer ponds, and then sort of like an orange to greenish light beam just shot down. In the meantime, our car had just died. There's nothing. It wouldn't even start. The lights went out, and everything died. So we said, let's get out of here. And the village was about a mile, half a mile away. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was December, the first weekend in December, so it was cold. So we started running into the village. But not even a quarter of a way down, maybe about close to the village. There's some culverts in the highway. They're about 3 feet in diameter. They said, we cannot run this. It's too cold. We cannot run as fast as we like to. Let's just walk. Let's just hide in here until that thing goes away. So we got into the culvert, and we sat in there for, I don't know, maybe about an hour. And then it was so cold, I said, we got to get out of here. So we got out, and that thing was still sitting there when we got out. And by this time, there was no beam that went down into the sewer ponds. So we started, again, walking toward the village. We could see the village from the highway, but it was really cold. It must have been about 0 degrees by that time. And so we saw a car, or we thought it was a car, coming down in the back of us, coming from Arizona. And I said, whatever we do, let's just get in front of that car so we'll stop. So this car took a long time to come. It must have been only going about 10 to 15 miles per hour. By the time that car caught up with us, we were in the middle of the road. We were waving our hands. We were trying to tell him to stop. And it finally stopped. And without asking any questions, we just jumped into the car because it was cold and we had to get out of there. We were scared. We jumped in the car and the car started moving. But it was really strange because the dashboard of the car looked like one of those old-timer cars right before the Second World War vintage. And the reason that I knew that was because there were these straps that were in the back seat that used to hold in the old cars. They were hanging like that. And I saw the dashboard, and it looked like a green light. And I saw the guy that was driving it, but I couldn't really make out the details of his face or whatever. He wasn't talking. I was jabbering away. I was talking to him. And in the back, there was a guy sitting in there where my brother and his girlfriend jumped in. And this guy was holding two dolls, a Raggedy Ann and a Raggedy Andy dolls, and just looking at us. They didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And we were just jabbering away and saying, did you see that thing that just stopped? And he's still sitting there, and just kept going about 10 miles per hour. We finally got into the village, and he started turning around. And it didn't, one thing that was very peculiar was that guy did not stop at stop signs. And we kept going around the village. We finally got in front of our mom's house, and we said, let's get out of here. We opened the doors. We finally got out. I don't know how we got out, but we got out. We walked into the house, and this is about 4 o'clock in the morning. It's still dark. We got into the house. I told my parents what we had gone through, and they sort of didn't believe us. And then my brother was already in bed, so he got up and he said, what's going on? So I said, come over here and look at these things. In those days, I had night vision binoculars. And we went out the back door, and right on top of our house was this UFO sitting there. And when I looked up there, and there was a dome-like structure over there, and I could see things walking around in there. There's about 3 or 4 of them. And I was looking through them with binoculars, but I couldn't really make out the details on that because this is like looking at a stadium, football stadium, with people walking up there at a very huge distance. You can't really make out the details. It's kind of fuzzy. And so it sat there for a long time, for about maybe 15, 20 minutes. We just got back in the house and we just forgot about it. I mean, we just got scared and we went back in there.
Clifford, this is one of the I've heard lots of stories and reports of UFOs extending beams, apparently of light, down into bodies of water. But to be honest, this is the first time I've ever heard of a UFO extending a beam down into a sewer lagoon. Do you think they were emptying out the bilge? Or this is a pretty interesting detail. I've never actually heard that before. That's pretty fascinating.
I don't know. I think after I thought about it, I said maybe they were picking up some type of because a lot of algae forms in there from the sewer ponds. Being an engineer, you know, there's a lot of algae that grows in there at that time of the year, right before turnover. You know, the winter and the summer turnovers. And wintertime, there's a lot of algae growth. That's why in the springtime, when it overturns, you can smell a lot of sewage all over the place. So I don't know. That's one thing that was very peculiar about that time. Now, this was about a week or maybe within 10 days of the Travis Walton experience. In that, you took that distance right there. It's probably about less than, maybe about 100 miles between where he was picked up and where we were at. But after that, it left, and we never saw it. But there's a lot of experiences that a lot of people have told me in Zuni about those type of encounters right here in the village. They actually come down here, especially during wintertime, during what we call our Shalako festivities about the first week in December.
Now, you mentioned a very interesting canyon that's east and southeast of the village, where for quite a number of years it appeared that these objects seemed to be coming and going from this particular canyon. And there's some sort of taboo spot there, a cave that the people aren't really allowed to go to, or it's strongly suggested not to go there. Do you want to describe some of the sightings that have happened there?
Well, there's a lot of different what we call our places of reverence. We're all around Zuni. There's a lot of sacred places. As a matter of fact, all over the Southwest. But on this particular canyon, that canyon goes, I would say, about 30 to 40 miles. It comes out there towards a place called Fence Lake, Kamado area. And that is a place where a lot of UFO activity perhaps happens, because they come out of that canyon. I saw one that came out of there probably about the early 70s. And he was a huge one. It's a huge one. A friend of mine that was in that canyon, they actually spotted one over their camping site. And I believe my friend Dan told you about that, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. That was quite an interesting story. They were walking back and camping in the canyon, and Dan woke up, and there was a huge object covering right over him, and he woke his brother up, who wanted to shoot it with a rifle. not advisable, I would say.
We don't want to shoot down those UFOs, because there's always the fear they may shoot back at us. We have Clifford Mahudi joining us this week. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien, and you're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
If you're in a service business, that's money ringing in your ears. If your phone's not ringing, chances are it's a problem with your marketing. Landscapers, painters, roofers, carpet cleaners, pet sitters, handymen. Anyone with a residential service business can build a huge and loyal customer base fast with the Magic Yellow Flyer. No more expensive newspaper, yellow pages, or internet pay-per-click ads. The Magic Yellow Flyer will have new customers calling you within 1 week. The Magic Yellow Flyer marketing system is the most effective and inexpensive way to build a referral-only service business in a short period of time. And the Magic Yellow Flyer comes with an outrageous 1-year guarantee. You will get new customers or your money back. For details, go to magicyellowflyer.com. No matter what business you're in, the Magic Yellow Flyer marketing system will work for you. Visit magicyellowflyer.com. Put the Magic Yellow Flyer to work for you today. Visit magicyellowflyer.com.
Can you live with minor aches and pains? Maybe. But oftentimes, those won't-go-away pains become so debilitating that we are not able to do things we used to, like go for a walk, garden, or even button a shirt. Now, restore normal function naturally and give yourself the freedom to move with Recovery Extra Strength. Over-the-counter drugs will stop the pain, but at the expense of your liver. Recovery Extra Strength is the number one solution for pain and inflammation. It contains Nutricol, a unique proprietary blend of green tea and grapes, and is made in Canada under strict Health Canada oversight of natural products. If you suffer from arthritis, bursitis, tendonitis, back, or other aches and pains, use Recovery Extra Strength. Call 866-543-3388 or go to RemarkableRecovery.com. Get free shipping on orders of $50 or more when you use checkout code GCN Radio. Call 1-866-543-3388 or go to RemarkableRecovery.com for Recovery Extra Strength for pain-free mobility.
What is a wind generator?
How can the wind produce power for a small cabin?
How can wind energy be stored and used during an emergency?
Can I assemble my own wind generator?
For answers to questions about wind power, visit windbluepower.com. Did you know the wind could provide your family with emergency power? It can with a wind generator from windbluepower.com. Learn how our amazing LightBreeze wind generator kit starts charging a 12-volt battery and just 6 mile per hour wind. Or see the new Cyclone X2 dual kit featuring two wind generators on just one tower. And learn why schools and universities across the country utilize our products to teach about wind power and alternative energy at windbluepower.com. All kits qualify for a 30% IRS tax credit for residential energy efficient property. Enter coupon code RADIO for a 5% discount at windbluepower.com. That's windbluepower.com or call 800-976-0026. That's 800-976-0026.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
I just want to hear more of it.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Genesis. You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. We're talking to Clifford Mahudi. And we've been mentioning, at least for the last few minutes, UFO sightings that he experienced, that other people experienced. Do you think, perhaps because so many sightings are occurring there on the reservation, that maybe you're being singled out for some reason?
No, I don't think so. I think we all, well, the Zuni teachings are that they've always been here. And again, going back to what I said previously, is that in times of good and bad, depending on what it is, I think the reason that they're appearing more often is about the things that probably be happening pretty soon, especially right now with the people all over the world going through a lot of turmoil, and also with a lot of the weather problems and a lot of different activities related to the Earth itself. I think that these are, our teachings are that they will be coming prior to what may be happening in the future. And this has, we have not seen this much UFO activity, but starting about the late 80s to about now, we see them almost on a nightly basis over here.
Does anyone have any photos of these things?
I think there's a lot of photos here, but it's very, again, it's taboo to talk about these things among the Zuni people because of their teachings. They always tell us, they say, well, that's not good, you're not supposed to take pictures, whatever.
Why is it taboo?
Well, because it's a bad omen. According to the teachings, it's a bad omen.
So are you saying that the UFOs are piloted by evil beings then?
No, it's a warning system. It's a warning system of what may happen if you do not follow the teachings. I believe this is why they're appearing more often over here, because we're not following, the Zuni people are not following the protocols they were given centuries and, I don't know, eons ago. They're not following the teachings. I believe this is why they're in constant appearances now than ever.
So you're saying then that the beings or whatever in control of these UFOs are aware that people aren't following the teaching somehow? Telepathy, what?
Well, yes, that is correct. My analysis of what is happening based upon, again, my teachings and what they talked about is that I believe that they're appearing for many reasons, and one of them is that they're not following the protocols given by them in the beginning of the Earth. They're not following the practices that were given as far as rituals are concerned. They're not even in sync. They're not in sync with the time schedules, which is the moon system and the sun system and the seasons. The Zuni people are not following what is supposed to be ritualistic scheduling, and they're also not following the orders that they are given to do, especially those people that are head of a lot of different priesthoods, a lot of societies, a lot of medicine orders, and also the people in general. They're not following what we have been told to do, given by the star people. And I think this is the reason that they're appearing more often. I don't think that it really has anything to do with what may be happening as far as Zuni is concerned, but I believe it's because what the rest of the world is doing. Because the Zunis were put here to be protected by those for the future, and that's why they're here where we are at. Same way with other tribes, the Hopi, for example.
Do you find also, Clifford, that more and more of the members of the tribes become assimilated in the outside world? They don't come back to your reservation to live?
Well, that is, especially with the younger ones, yes. It started happening, these ancient teachings were kind of let loose right after World War II and towards the, during the Johnson administration of the Great Society. This is where we started losing the practices, and that's why we are now sort of in a downhill slope as far as gaining our rituals and keeping intact the teachings that were given us many eons ago.
Now, well, when you discuss UFOs, a lot of times where you see UFOs, other events occur, such as strange creatures. Are there legends, for example, of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it?
Yes, we have many, many legends. Let me go back to what I said earlier about these people, the literal meaning of those type of creatures or beings, or they are referred as raw people. And they also, they can appear in three-dimensional form if they want to, or the same way with the other beings that can come to you in also terms of good. If you ask for certain ritual practices to help out the society, they will also appear. And they say that the Zuni's literal meaning is that they go by the air. The literal meaning is that they go by the air. In other words, they just float. They're right here. That's why every day in our practices of the Zuni way, we are sitting here with them. We are standing here with them, but we have to stand behind them and at their feet. We're supposed to be very humble because they're here. They're watching us all the time. And they're called, we refer to them as the watchers or the keeper of our ways. And they know exactly what all of us are doing. It doesn't make any difference what order or how high you are up in the order system. They know exactly what we're doing, what I'm doing. And that's why when people violate them, there's no punishment because they say, well, the raw people will take care of them. So this is why it's reiterated to all of us that if you don't, it's up to you. If you don't want to do this, then we'll let the raw people take care of you. That's what they tell you. There's no punishment.
Your friend Rick, when I was up there a couple of visits ago, he lives on the kind of on the edge of the village, and he mentioned a series of Bigfoot encounters that he had that were quite interesting. Do you want to relate some of those interesting accounts for us?
Well, Rick, he lives up on a place called Black Rock, which is about 3 miles from here. It's up on he lives up on a plateau up there. And one time he was coming back from Gallup, New Mexico, and about a couple miles from his house, they came across this road. And they came upon a Bigfoot character, creature, whatever. And they he was right in the middle of the road, or side of the road, he said. And then when they put the lights on him, they stopped and they put the lights on him, and he just walked across the pavement. The pavements were, about 12, 15 feet across. He said he just took a few steps across the road, and he went over there, and he just went over a barbed wire fence, which usually are about, maybe 3 or 4 feet high for rights of way, and he just stepped over it, so it must have been about 8 to 10 feet tall. And when he saw that, he said he got scared first, but then he let out a scream, I believe he said, after he left. And then about 2 or 3 nights later, he also heard the same scream, and pretty soon he would hear the screams, and then later on it just went away for a while. Then he said that he kind of got lonesome for his scream, because he knew that he was a living being, and he was kind of wondering whatever happened to him. But he said that after he thought about it, then he would come back and he would make a scream again to let him know that he was still around. But there's a lot of also other people have seen something like that in this one road that goes from Zuni into Gallup, sort of like a back road, but it's paved now. So that one canyon is full of creatures that a lot of people with psychic powers don't even go through there because they're afraid of them.
Well, I'll have to stay away from there if I ever visit your tribe. And I think I'm going to want to do that. I'm going to want to travel over there and learn more.
Especially
about
at night, Gene.
Yeah. I'll bring my son with me when he's home from Spain so I have some moral support. Yeah. Our guest this week on the PowerCast is Clifford Mahudi, a Zuni elder. We've been talking about Indian legends, but more modern experiences involving UFOs and strange creatures. By the way, we want your reaction to all this. As always, go to forum.thepowercast.com, forum.thepowercast.com. Sign up. It's free, and that gives you the chance to participate in the discussions or not. Up to you. Our co-host this week is Christopher O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the PowerCast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.